2. Comparative Imperial Pathologies, Rome, Britain, and America. In late July, 43 BC, a centurion from Octavian's army suddenly appeared in the Senate House. From the assembled gathering, he demanded the consulship, still vacant, for his general. The Senate refused. The centurion brushed back his cloak and laid his hand on the hilt of his sword. "If you do not make him consul," he warned, "then this will." And so it happened. Tom Holland, Rubicon, The Last Years of the Roman Republic, 2003. War came naturally enough to the British, after so much experience of it, and empire offered them a more or less perpetual battlefield. Jan Morris, Heaven's Command, An Imperial Progress, 1973. The English-speaking peoples are past masters in the art of concealing their selfish national interests in the guise of the general good. This kind of hypocrisy is a special and characteristic peculiarity of the Anglo-Saxon mind. E. H. Carr, The 20 Years' Crisis, 1939. In 1972, Henry Kissinger, then President Nixon's national security advisor, was in Beijing talking with Zhou Enlai, China's first post-revolutionary prime minister, about normalizing Chinese-American relations. At one point in their conversation, Kissinger asked what the prime minister thought was the significance of the French Revolution. Zhou replied, "It's too soon to tell." Zhou Enlai was not being as enigmatic as this sounds. The two men had been discussing the Chinese Revolution of 1949, the most complex revolutionary upheaval in recorded history. A great deal of time will have to pass before we can begin to appreciate its various meanings, if we ever do. Zhou Enlai was also reminding Kissinger that historical significance is an extremely elusive concept, and that comparisons, precedents, analyses, and claims of importance derived from history are almost invariably elements of arguments best judged by their contemporary purposes and whether or not they are persuasive, rather than by their claims of accuracy. The most famous English-language study of ancient Rome is surely Edward Gibbon's The History of the Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, published in 6 volumes between 1776 and 1788. He contended, among other things, that Christianity brought down Rome because it sapped the Roman spirit, was hostile to Mediterranean culture, and displaced Roman imperial pretensions with monasticism and contemplation. Not many people today would buy that interpretation, particularly since the collapse of the Roman Republic into dictatorship preceded by a century the spread of Christianity. Moreover, Emperor Constantine's conversion to Christianity in 312 AD imposed the autocratic style of Rome on the Church, as much as it Christianized the Roman Empire.